Chapter 1. The sky over Aventol was a bright blue like the color of a lapis lazuli. Not as deep as sapphire, but not the robin's egg blue of a typical summer back on Earth. Perfect white clouds scudded along the gemstone canvas as if they were painted there by some giant wielding a heavenly paintbrush, and the ocean I was floating in was the perfect temperature and was calm as far as the eye could see. It was enchanting, and I pulled myself, stroke by stroke, through the glittering waters of the Ocean Mercedes. The water itself was crystalline and tasted just as sweet as I remembered it tasting as it ran down my face and over my lips. I felt more buoyant than I normally did, and when I kicked my legs harder, it was almost as if I was skimming along the surface of the gently swelling waters. Then a black and green fin rose out of the water on my left like a sail that glittered with thousands of diamond droplets. I held my breath, streamlined my body, and dared myself to open my eyes under the clear water. Just like before, a pair of large chrome-colored eyes gazed up at me from below, and the monstrous koi-like fish kept pace with me while we raced toward the horizon. Now that I knew what the behemoth was, I wasn't afraid it was going to eat me or anything like that. In fact, I wasn't even sure what Mercedes' sacred fish ate. But as long as it wasn't people, me and Bubba down there would be just fine. "Come on!" I shouted, and windmilled my arms faster. The fish below me seemed to grin, and it sped up until we were no longer swimming in tandem, but now trying to outpace each other. Stroke after stroke, I willed myself to swim harder until I suddenly lost sight of the sacred fish. "Hey," I said, as I stopped and turned myself in a circle in search of my swimming companion. But the green and black koi vanished into the inky depths of the ocean. I bobbed up and down on the ocean's surface as I searched for any signs of anything, come to think of it. What was I swimming toward again? Every direction was rolling blue ocean for as far as the eye could see. Where was Nada Isle, or any of the other isles of Aventol for that matter? The waves started to swell higher, and the clouds darkened overhead. The water, which was once clear like crystal, was now a deep, ultramarine so dark I couldn't see my feet in the near blackness. A mighty wind began to whip and churn the seas, and I had to work my arms and legs overtime just to keep afloat as the heavy waves threatened to collapse on top of me over and over again. "Ah!" I yelled, as I was hammered down just as I clawed my way to the surface. It seemed like the harder I tried to breach the relentless waves, the more I was dragged down as if by some invisible force until I didn't know which way was up. A droning howl echoed through the depths, but unlike the howl that preceded the demon scourge, a second sound rose above the first. Singing. At first, it reminded me of the ethereal way Shay sounded whenever she sang. But the longer I listened, the more I could tell I had never heard this voice before, despite the fact it sounded so familiar. I forgot about breathing and trying to struggle my way to the surface, and instead I propelled my way down where the voice was coming from. The singing was getting louder, and I kicked my legs harder, even though the darkness was all-encompassing. My fingers strained, and I could sense I was almost...
"Alex?"
A flicker of a voice brightened the darkness. But it wasn't the voice I was searching for. Bit by bit, my surroundings surfaced again, and I registered that I wasn't swimming in the ocean but meditating on top of the small terrace over Ithaca's stone garden. Or trying to meditate, at least.
"Alex?"
Rylan asked again. And I peeked one eye open so I could glance at him as he stood on the top rungs of the ladder. A small tray with a small steaming pot and cup were on the terrace landing.
"Oh, I'm sorry, you're meditating. I can come back later."
No, it's fine," I chuckled, and waved for my precocious stable boy, and now foster son, to join me on the terrace. "What's on your mind, kiddo?"
"Arvid wanted me to find you because there was some leftover dried coley, and, we all thought you might like the last of it,"
Rylan said as he settled cross-legged on the wooden slats next to me and pulled the tray closer. "Thanks, bud," I said, and ruffled his unruly mop of sand-colored hair. "I can't believe there's any left."
"Just enough for one more cupful,"
he chirped in his eager voice, and then poured the fragrant brew from the tiny pot into the clay mug for me. Yes, I couldn't help but hiss as I brought the Coley up and inhaled a big lungful of that bold and energizing scent that was a little more smoky sweet than the coffee I was used to. Lately, I found my taste buds craving things more Aventolian, and Coley fast replaced my need for my beloved caffeine. When I finally took a sip of the chicory-like tea, I groaned in satisfaction. Oh, great goddess, that's good.
Is it really that good?
Ryland giggled at my dramatics as I rolled my eyes, groaned again, and quaffed nearly half in 3 gulps. Why don't you try for yourself? I asked, and then handed him the last few sips in the mug.
Really?
He took the Coley reverently between his palms, as if I was letting him do something cool like sit at the adult's Christmas table so he could have a sip of my wine. Careful, it's hot, I chuckled again. And then I watched as he grinned and took a gulp of the drink. Immediately, Ryland's eyebrows puckered, and his smile wobbled as his expression fought with itself. On one hand, it was obvious he didn't like the flavor of the Coley tea, but on the other, he was trying to force himself to believe it was good so he wouldn't disappoint me. So, do you like it? I asked innocently, even though I could see his bulged-out cheeks because he refused to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
He nodded as his eyes watered. Ryland, I said, and placed my hand on his shoulder. You don't have to like it, it's okay. The boy nodded in relief and spat the large mouthful of Coley back into the mug.
Oh, thank you. That did not taste as good as it smells, he said,
and wiped his mouth as he handed me the cup. Sure, I chuckled, and then set the Coley, now flavored with Ryland's backwash, to the side.
So you come up here to meditate?
The kid asked a moment later, as we sat side by side and watched the early morning sun climb higher into the sky. Shay was flying laps with Victory, her white canterfly with the gray glass wings, over the pastures, and her bright red hair was like a flame that made her stand out against the backdrop of the dewy gray morning. It's the most peaceful place on the estate, I said, and leaned back on my palms.
Yeah,
he agreed, as he mirrored my posture, and we both watched Shay.
Peaceful. And it helps?
What, meditation? I asked.
Yeah,
he said, as he kept his eyes trained on the butterfly Pegasus.
What does it feel like?
To meditate? I glanced at him, but he was still staring over the grounds, as if he was being careful not to make eye contact with me. Well, it's quiet, mostly, and hard to get right. That's why I need to do it often, so I can get better at it.
But it helps with your dreams, right?
Ryland finally turned to look at me with a calculating expression on his young face. Well, it did if the dreams would make fucking sense already. I'd been having that particular dream for days now, and meditation wasn't giving me any new answers. I frowned as I scrutinized him, and I wondered what he was getting at. Something was definitely up with him. But before I could pry deeper, a pair of fluffy koala ears poked up from the terrace as Jenner, my trusty butler-slash-house-manager, appeared on the ladder.
"Terribly sorry to bother you, Mr. Alex, but I believe we have a few matters to discuss,"
the older man said as he tweaked his ever-present monocle, brushed off his tattered and patchy jacket, and took a seat in front of us.
"Oh, Ryland, lad, do me a favor and bring the porax into the barn before it rains."
"You think it'll rain?" I asked, as I looked at the golden shafts of sunlight quickly devouring the remains of the morning mist.
"I don't, but Madam Midgeon and her wonky wing are never wrong, apparently."
Jenner chuckled fondly as his large ears trembled. I came to understand that was the koala man's version of blushing, and Ryland and I exchanged amused glances. It was Ithaca's worst-kept, well-known secret our resident butler had a flame for the Batwoman who lived in a witchy cottage just north of the estate. She did us a major favor by offering her healing expertise when over half of us were down for the count, and then again when I nearly bought the farm after breaking the curse Arcus Dolor snared me with. If it wasn't for Horus and his fast thinking with the Herald amulet we forged, and then Midgeon's herbal tinctures and concoctions, I probably wouldn't be alive and out of bed like I was now. "Better do as he says," I said to Ryland as I decided to trust their judgment.
"Okay,"
he sighed, but got up and headed toward the ladder anyway. "Hey, thanks for the coley, by the way," I told him. And his smile perked up once more as he jaunted down the rungs and ran off toward the pasture. Then I put Ryland's weirdness out of my mind for now and turned my attention to the koala man. "What can I do for you, Mr. Jenner?"
"I have some updates for you, sir," he said.
"Horace, Tovish?" My spine straightened, and I grabbed the robe I shed earlier so I could slip it over my shoulders.
"Tovish is still looking for any leads on what Gellivane might be up to," Jenner said,
as he removed his monocle in order to polish it on a clean part of his worn jacket.
"I sent Rufus back with his cuff as you requested."
I nodded as I rubbed the circular scar left over from Dolor's curse. The old archivist looked like a more senior version of Jenner with a wooden leg to boot, and he'd lent me his enchanted cuff so the pain in my arm was numb enough for me to focus on the duel with Dolor. "Thanks for sending it back." I flexed the fingers in my right hand and inwardly winced at the zinging tingle that shot up to the back of my elbow, as if I'd stuck a fork into a wall socket.
"How is your arm feeling?"
Jenner asked shrewdly, as he looked me over from head to toe. "Fine," I lied, and forced a smile onto my face. "Never better."
"Because it wouldn't be unheard of if you had some lingering effects,"
the wise koala man said to me.
"After all, Horace's arrow destroyed Arcus's enchanted hand well after you took your shot. Horace nearly vaporized that herald core just trying to shield you from the implosion of the curse."
The old man gestured to the amulet I still wore around my neck right next to my duelist stone and the wooden figure of a canterfly Rylan carved for me. The red gem was cracked right down the center and had gone from a bright ruby red to a dull maroon. I also could no longer feel the faint hum of power within it, which told me it was little more than a trinket now. "I'm fine," I insisted, and tucked my collection of pendants beneath my robe. "It doesn't bother me like it used to, and besides, I promised I would make sure it got back to him."
"We'll keep searching for a remedy, lad,"
Jenner said as he patted my leg, and I smiled at the kindness shining in his eyes. "I'm sure if anyone can, it's you," I said, and climbed to my feet. "Now, tell me about Horace." I helped the koala man to his feet as well, and we both climbed down from the terrace and headed back toward the courtyard, and to where I hoped something was cooking for breakfast in Arvid's kitchen.
"Our Horace is still unaccounted for, I'm afraid, so my news is actually from the Asha Council," Jenner said as he cut to the chase and erased any false hopes.
In a way, I appreciated his matter-of-fact attitude in these situations, because it forced me to set aside emotion and deal with the present obstacle. I was a rank 4 duelist with 3 successful duels under my belt, and as my cat wife Zoe liked to remind me, my status usually came with a lot of people gunning for me. It wasn't until recently that I realized the full responsibility I had on my shoulders, until it almost cost me the makeshift family I had accrued on Nada Isle. I needed to start prioritizing based on things other than my base instinct to rush in first, ask questions later, and fuck the details. That meant playing by the Asher Council's pedantic rules. "What's the council got to say now?" I asked, as I pushed open the outer doors to the courtyard.
"They have again explained the property once belonging to Arcus Dola is being held in stasis due to technical complications during the duel,"
Jenner recited, as he followed me toward the kitchen.
"They claim because they cannot be sure which weapon actually killed the man, your claim to his property and assets is null and void. Also, Horace is still outlawed, and the council wanted to give us a friendly reminder that if we are caught harboring him, we are just as at fault and will be dealt with accordingly."
"Kind of them," I said sarcastically. "Then we'll just have to work harder on finding a way to clear Horace's name. That way they'll release the property to me and we can check out the library. I honestly don't want anything else from that place."
"Dola's estate is just mainly land for the canterfly breeding enterprise he let go to the wayside when he became more and more involved in the arcane practices," Jenner continued. "Your second estate, Icarian, is what Shay wished her father's estate was and more. It seems the only good thing he did for that vibrant young girl was give her the love for the sky and all creatures big and small."
We both stopped in the center of the courtyard and watched Shay and Victory gallop overhead. The both of them looked so graceful and majestic, as if they were one fluid machine built for the sky, and I couldn't help but agree with the diminutive koala man. Shay was beautiful all the time, but she looked stunning when she was in the air doing what she did best.
"Actually, sir, I think I may have a solution that might give everyone what they want,"
the clever koala man said as he rocked up on the balls of his feet. "I'm all ears, my friend," I said, and finally tore my eyes away from Shay's idle loops and elegant barrel rolls.
"Since you really have no desire for the property itself, save the books in the library, we might be able to interest the council to let us in to record what we want and leave them the rest," he said.
"Really?" I perked up and tilted my head. "How would that work?"
"I have a feeling they are making this situation more difficult than it needs to be, simply because they have the most to gain if your claim is overturned," he explained, and tweaked his monocle. "If a duel is not considered legit, then it is absorbed into the council."
"So you're saying if we give them everything they want anyway, with only one small concession, they'll just drop the case against Horace's interference during the duel?" I clarified.
"Exactly so," he said with a wink. "We just need permission from the council to enter the library, and that's all we need. Shall I draft up an official letter with this request?"
"Let's hold off for now, but keep that in our back pocket for later," I said. "If it comes to it, we'll try anything to get Horace off the hook." A sudden flurry of flapping grabbed our attention, and the eccentric Batwoman healer landed in front of us. Then she swiveled her long satellite ears atop her frizzy head and glared at Jenner.
"I trust you're not tiring my patient, Cornelius,"
the woman huffed. And she marched up to the koala man with her odd bone necklace tinkling as she wagged her finger. "Cornelius?" I asked, and eyed an embarrassed Jenner up and down with a smirk.
"Yes, no, I'm not tiring your patient, madam, I promise,"
he spluttered, and busied himself with cleaning the monocle he'd already cleaned.
"I be the authority on that,"
she said with a three-fingered hand poised on her hip. Then the batty voodoo-like priestess marched toward me, yanked my right arm forward, and moved my sleeve out of the way so she could examine my scar. It really was much better. The last time I saw it before I passed out after defeating the giant of a man, Dolor, the skin where his enchanted marble hand had clasped around my forearm was blackened and oozing pus. When I woke up back home, it had calmed down to an angry pink, and now it was all but faded into a white band that somehow took on the shape of a snake devouring its own tail. "What's the prognosis, Doc?" I asked the Bat Lady, as she completed a slow circle around me.
"I suppose you may resume all of your normal activities,"
she grunted and blinked at me through her Coke bottle spectacles.
"Come, Cornelius. I must make it back to my cottage before mid-epoch, or else I will miss my chance to harvest more purple toadstools."
"Of course, madam," he said and offered his arm. "I shall escort Midgeon, and then I will draft that response to the council for you, Mr. Alex."
"Thanks, Jenner," I said, and shook his furry paw. "And thanks as always for patching me up, Madam Midgeon."
"Stay out of trouble,"
she tutted, and I waved at them as they exited the courtyard. I shook my head as I could hear the sound of their fond bickering drift away, but it was nice to get a clean bill of health from the healer, especially when she specifically said I could return to all of my normal activities. Suddenly it wasn't hunger that my appetite was eager to get back to, and I glanced first to my right, where the kitchen was, and then to my left toward the door leading back into the manor, upstairs, and back under the covers where my catwife was likely still lounging around like some lazy, lovely, loungeabout thing. Left it was. When I got back to the third floor and the suite of rooms I shared with my two beautiful wives, I made sure to quietly push open the door so I wouldn't wake up the sleeping beauty inside. It turned out all my silent ninja ways were for nothing, though, because Zoe was already awake and curled up on the windowsill with a book in her hands. "Hey," I said, when I sauntered closer and leaned against the wall next to her.
"Hello, husband,"
she greeted me. She was dressed in the soft nightie that made her look open and vulnerable. She looked so cozy curled up among the cushions just as a light rain started to patter against the window, and my heart did a funny flip-flop in my chest. It was awesome she could still make my pulse skip a beat. "What are you reading?" I asked.
"I cannot yet understand the written words, but the pictures are even more fascinating, and they tell the same story according to what I remember,"
Zoe said without looking up from the pages. Tell me about it as best you can, I said, as a fun but kind of naughty idea popped into my head. And I knelt down on the floor in front of her.
Well, the story is about a woman who looks like she's made of fire,
she said with that wonder-tinged voice that meant she was enthralled. I grinned and twirled my finger around her shiny black tail, and it idly curled around my wrist in a playfully adorable way that was made all the more adorable because it didn't appear as if she was consciously aware of what her own tail was doing. Fire, huh? I asked, just to keep her talking, as I pulled one of her feet out of its folded position and gave it a little rub.
Yes, gales of flames pouring from every fiber,
Zoe continued and automatically offered me her other foot. And I inwardly thrilled at how her body was already responding to my ministrations. I see, I said, and then nibbled the arch of her right foot. Her reaction was priceless.
Hey!
Zoe suddenly gasped out a string of her high-chiming giggles that contrasted with her naturally smoky voice and drove me absolutely crazy with desire. Then she tucked both legs up to her chest and fixed me with her wide eyes. It was almost as if her expression couldn't decide if she was mad at me for tickling her or more curious to see where I would take it next. I stared into her beautiful ocean storm eyes and knee-walked closer to her as I let my robe drop to the floor.
Would you like to see the pictures?
She purred, as she brought the book closer. She then unfolded her legs so I could lay my head on her lap as she flipped the multicolored pages. I nuzzled into her belly for a second before I situated myself between her knees and smoothed my palms up her silky legs, and her sheer nightgown came with until it was rucked up around her waist. I want you to tell me the story, I ordered, and massaged circles into her hip bones with my thumbs. Zoe's breathing kicked up, and she worried her lower lip between her teeth as I placed a kiss on her knee. I'm listening, I muttered. I promise.
Long ago,
she began as she opened her legs wider.
The bird women of Neta Isle were all born with wings.
Oh, I murmured and squeezed her thighs as I sank lower.
They all had wings because it was their sacred duty to protect the people from the sky in the form of fierce warriors,
she continued, even though her breath caught in her throat a few times, especially when I started licking a trail up her inner thigh. Go on, I said.
After the demon tide. Oh.
She gasped as I licked higher, and then she bit her lip to try and stay focused.
There was less of a need for the daughters of Neta, so the warrior women shed their wings in order to settle and have families. Eventually, Neta women born with the power of flight became fewer and fewer.
Uh-huh, I hummed, and slid Zoe's hips forward on the window seat bench. Then I rucked her nightgown up higher so I could admire the thatch of dark curly hair and the tender pink of her pussy lips resting between those sinful legs.
Alex,
she whispered, and threaded her long fingers through my tangled hair. Keep talking, I said, and then threw both of her legs over my shoulders so I could set to work.
Okay.
She said in a shuddery voice as I licked up the line of her delicate slit.
Well, the legends talk about a woman who is called the Incarnate.
Yeah, I asked, just to keep her going, and I pulled her even further off the bench so she had to lean back on her elbows to remain upright.
Oh, goddess.
Zoe groaned when I pulled the lips of her pussy apart with my thumbs in order to lap where her sweet, musky odor smelled the strongest. And then what happened? I asked, after a second or two of teasing licks. It seemed as if she was having trouble focusing, because the book fell to the floor a moment later, and she twined both hands in my hair so she could direct me where she most wanted.
Alex!
She whined in a high-pitched tone of voice when I opened her wider and used every trick in my arsenal to make her see stars. With my tongue, I swirled and lathed around that soft pearl of her pleasure until it was throbbing in time with her pulse, and a gush of her sweetness trickled down her thighs. Then, and only then, did I slip two fingers into the satiny chasm of her pussy.
Oh, my love, yes.
She hissed and rocked her hips against my face. Her head thunked back against the window, and she thrashed her head from side to side.
I need...
Oh, what do you need, baby? I asked, and added a third finger.
Oh, so full. Your hands, Alex.
She rambled and rocked harder.
I love your hands. They're so strong, yet gentle. There, my love, there.
There, I purred, as I stroked the pads of my fingers against that special spot of hers. Like before, her inner walls squeezed around my digits like a vice.
Yes, oh, Mercedes,
she said, and her orgasm crashed over her almost without warning. Oh, fuck, Zoe, I groaned, and she clenched around my fingers as she trembled and arched her back through her pleasure. My dick throbbed in sympathy with every contraction, but I couldn't do anything about it unless I wanted both of us to fall ungracefully to the floor. Just before I was about to suggest we move to the bed, the familiar scent of ginger lilies was my only warning before a gloriously naked Shay was plastered to my back, her slightly damp and chilled skin contrasting deliciously with how overheated I was beginning to feel.
You started without me,
Shay chuckled, and her hands flowed down my shoulders and along Zoe's legs. Together we helped lower the still trembling Catwoman down to straddle my lap.
We thought you were out exercising the canterflies,
Zoe murmured, and carted her hand through Shay's damp crimson locks.
We were just getting warmed up for you. I'm not complaining, mind you,
Shay said as she pressed herself closer.
It seems as if I have perfect timing.
Oh, Shay, I groaned, as my second wife reached around my waist and dipped her hot hand beneath the waistband of the cotton pants I was still wearing. She wrapped her fingers around my turgid shaft and gave me one long, glorious stroke that caused white to flare in the corners of my vision. It was so divine. Oh, fuck.
That's the idea, hopefully.
She chuckled sinfully, pulled me out of my pants, and held me tightly at the base.
Zoe, get on our husband's throbbing erection, please.
Zoe didn't need to be told twice. And she shucked off her nightie and tossed it to the side before she lifted herself up and sank slowly down onto my titanium hard cock.
Oh, Alex.
Zoe whined again as her hands flew to my shoulders for purchase.
Yes, he's big, isn't he, dear one?
Shay murmured and brushed the dark hair out of Zoe's face.
Rest until you're used to the stretch of his cock deep inside you. I like the ache.
The Catwoman moaned as she arched her head back and closed her eyes.
I like it when Alex spreads me open.
Oh, fuck, I said, and smoothed my hands up to cup her full breasts.
Move now, Zoe,
Shay urged, and she guided my catwife by the hips to gyrate in a slow circle that caused me to throw my own head back at the intense sensation. I was right on the edge, but I didn't feel worried about falling over because Shay was there driving our pace. It was achingly slow and sensual, but neither Zoe nor I wanted to do anything but follow Shay's lead, and the resulting orgasm that began to build smoldered with no signs of dying down. At some point, I was hovering on the edge of my climax for so long, it felt as if my spirit almost left my body. The three of us were connected in a way that almost transcended our physical forms, and when my orgasm finally crested, I could almost feel an echo of pleasure from the other two as we all hovered on the brink.
Oh, goddess. Alex. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Zoe chanted as Shay drove the pace forward relentlessly.
Oh, harder, Alex,
my phoenix wife said in my ear, and I could feel how her own hand was busy with her own pleasure as we both brought Zoe to hers. Fuck. Oh, I'm coming, I warned through my gritted teeth, as I drove up into Zoe's grasping channel even harder.
Yes, my love,
Shay gasped.
Fill her with your seed. She needs your child so desperately.
Make yourself feel good, baby, I told her, as one of my arms flew up, and I tangled my fingers in Shay's crimson waves.
Alex, oh!
Zoe cried out as her second climax hit her like a tsunami and took me with her. Shit! I said, as my balls contracted, and I began to shoot my pent-up load deep inside her hungry pussy.
Yes, my loves! Oh!
Shay said, and the three of us rocked together as our pleasure rebounded threefold. When the tempest of our lovemaking finally wound down, and I could actually form a coherent thought, I returned to kiss Shay on her heart-shaped mouth, and then the two of us cuddled around our catwife as she purred happily in her afterglow. "Is it still raining outside?" I asked with my eyes closed, as both my wives cuddled with their heads on my chest.
Yes,
Shay murmured on my right.
"Whatever shall we do to pass the time?"
"I can think of a few things," I said, and cracked open an eye.
"Bed now,"
Zoe ordered. And Shay and I both laughed as we followed her shiny black tail as it disappeared behind the bed drapes. The rest of the rainy morning was fueled with two more rounds of glorious lazy morning sex, interspersed between bites of food we kept ordering from Arvid's kitchen in between rounds. It was a perfect morning, and I never wanted it to end. But of course, living as a duelist in Aventol always came with its surprises and untimely interruptions, and today was no different. So, of course, when the three of us were about to settle down for a much-deserved nap, Shay's top maidservant, Nevra, popped her head in with a concerned look on her badger-like face.
"Sorry to disturb you, Mr. Alex, but you have company in the form of the Asher Lord,"
she said, and wrung her hands as the three of us peeped at her from over the blankets. Gavlane? What did he want?